Newly released notes from Peter Strzok and the FBI confirm the Obama administration's plot to take down the Trump admin and General Flynn.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Folks, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We wanted to dive into this more today because though we mentioned on the broadcast yesterday, we did not take when we were going through the Flynn opinion and obviously the ramifications of that. By the way, we've got a new minute order from Judge Sullivan, signed by Judge Sullivan yesterday. It came out last night. He said, in light of the opinion and order issued by the Court of Appeals on Mr. Flynn's petition for writ of mandamus, the deadlines and hearing dates set forth in the minute order of May 19th, those were the hearing dates set forth for July, are hereby stayed. That's what we've got so far now in Judge Sullivan's immediate response to that Court of Appeals in the Flynn matter. But we want to spend more time going through the ramifications of just this half page of notes released by Peter Strzok that confirm what we now know, the January 5th meeting at the White House with Peter Strzok, and you've got Jim Comey, you've also got Susan Rice, the President of the United States at the time, President Obama, the Vice President of the United States at the time, Vice President Biden, all of this meeting. And you've got the Vice President, who's now the Democrat Party's candidate for President of the United States, Joe Biden. He's the first one in the notes mentioned, and it's talking about using the Logan Act. Now, to remind you, remember, this was an investigation they were ready to close. And it actually looks like that from Jim Comey, who's testified plenty. So I would like to go back to him and say, when you said that the Flynn calls, yes, he was Flynn and Kislyak were talking on calls, but they appear legit. So are you saying that what Mike Flynn was doing the whole time was just normal, kind of what you do as a transition coming in? You would likely, if you were going to be the incoming national security advisor, potentially reach out to one of the superpowers ambassadors? So one of Russia's ambassadors? It's not like, you know, we made out Russia during the Mueller report to be like almost like we have like no diplomatic relationship with Russia, or like they're like Iran and they don't have like an embassy operating. They have a fully functioning. I go to Thad Bennett, Washington, D.C. I mean, Thad, this Ambassador Kislyak, he was well known in Washington, D.C. The embassy from Russia is the second largest embassy in D.C. Behind the U.K., maybe. I mean, so you got the U.K., you have Russia's embassy, you have Chinese embassy. These are countries that are operating not just at the United Nations with their mission, but they literally have their ambassadors here. And as we see from Jim Comey, in a meeting with the President of the United States and Vice President of the United States, President Obama, Vice President Biden, and he's saying that these calls look absolutely legit.
Jordan, if you're the incoming national security advisor and you're not having conversations with those officials, you are not doing your job, plain and simple. And a couple of just very top-line takeaways from these notes that we're going to get into. If you're Director Comey, and if these conversations are legit, then Jordan, why a couple of weeks later do you just send a couple of guys over to try to trap General Flynn if there's a legitimate conversation going on here? And look, I think I can answer my own question there, because while Director Comey has dirty hands on this all over, it's because the President of the United States, the outgoing president, and the vice president directed it, Jordan. I mean, that's what these notes say. It really does. You get the right people on it. Who are the right people? The right people at this point was Director Comey and Peter Strzok.
So on January 4th, the day before this meeting, we know that the FBI drafted a document summarizing findings on what they called Crossfire Razor, this before Crossfire Hurricane, and they were ready to close this investigation. And then Peter Strzok writes, hey, don't close Razor. That's what he wrote. He said, seventh floor involved. So the top level of the FBI, the highest echelons of FBI leadership. And if you're going to the top echelons of the FBI leadership past Peter Strzok, I mean, that's Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, Peter Strzok was the head of counterintel. He was a deputy director of the FBI. So, again, a lot to unpack here. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Now, after this briefing, we know that President Obama asked Sally Yates and Jim Comey to, quote, stay behind, said he had, quote, learned of the information about Flynn and his conversation with the Russian's ambassador about sanctions. Obama specified he did not want any additional information on the matter. He was seeking info on whether the White House should be treating Flynn any differently given the information. We know that now. Literally, we have that in the notes from Peter Strzok. And we also know that that same day that this meeting occurred in the Oval Office with Peter Strzok and the Vice President, and the President of the United States, and Sally Yates and Susan Rice and Jim Comey, that the same day, Obama's Chief of Staff, Dennis McDonough, puts in an unmasking request of Mike Flynn. Then we know that 7 days later, the last unmasking request that we've been reported on yet, this is the last one we've been reported on, comes from Vice President Biden. And it's not his chief of staff that's named. Thad, that's an interesting point, too. I mean, just to remind people, January 12th, this is just a few days before they're leaving the White House. They're leaving, they're no longer going to be there to direct this operation anymore. And I think that's why you get a gap, too, between this time period in January. And it takes until May until they get a special counsel appointed. So there's a gap because you basically had Jim Comey and Peter Strzok tried to do this on their own without taking their orders from the vice president who suggested how to keep it alive with the Logan Act. But I think it's important to point out that that unmasking request that Joe Biden hasn't gotten pressed on enough, and I think these notes might lead to that, it has him directly listed. It doesn't list like his chief of staff or one of his deputies even. It literally lists Vice President Biden. It's the last unmasking request we know about from the Obama administration.
Well, a couple of different things on that point, Jordan. First of all, I think maybe President Obama was a little bit shrewder than Vice President Biden, so at least to send someone else to do his unmasking. It is pretty telling that the vice president did it specifically, but I would tell you, I think it's weird on both levels. Like, if you go all the way down to the UN ambassador, why is someone that uninvolved making an unmasking request? And then you go all the way up to the vice president, why is someone that elite making an unmasking request? Jordan, these unmasking requests are supposed to come from career officials who are directly involved in the intelligence so that the decision makers, the policy makers, the president and the vice president don't actually see that. Then they get it aggregated and briefed to them. So I think it's very strange that the unmasking happened on both levels. And I do think it's also important to point out, Jordan, all of this documentation that we have, from the unmasking to the January 4th field office memo to the memo of the January 5th meeting that Susan Rice wrote later, Jordan, that's all because groups like the ACLJ have gotten involved and demanded this information be available to the public. It's come from different sources. We've had to piece it together. But Jordan, can you imagine if we didn't have all this information and did not know the extent to which the outgoing Obama administration was trying to undermine the incoming administration? It's very critical that we can now piece all of this together.
I mean, this is, again, Joe Biden has been asked about how much he knew about this, and bizarrely, he tries to play it down and then kind of couches it in this interview that is now getting played again with George Stephanopoulos. But I just want to point out that the first person we also know about in the notes, so the first and the last is Joe Biden. Okay, the last unmasking request of Mike Flynn that we know about is literally listing Vice President Joe Biden. The first person on these Strzok notes that they believe that this was, you know, what was important and what could be unclassified is the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, suggesting how to keep an investigation open of Mike Flynn. How about we use the Logan Act? Now, literally, it's a law that has existed but never been used against anyone. In fact, it wasn't used against Mike Flynn. You know, it wasn't actually, remember, Mike Flynn, they came back and said, you didn't tell us all about your phone calls. They didn't say you violated the Logan Act. Because no one believes the Logan Act is actually constitutional. It was written in a time period where you could say it would actually make sense that a U.S. A person should not hold themselves out to be someone who like represents the government, so they shouldn't conduct foreign policy outside of the structure of the U.S. It was written at the beginning of our country when someone would have to get on a boat to go overseas. It could take them months or a year to deliver their message, foreign policy decisions. And so you wanted to make sure the people delivering that message were actually from the United States and from the U.S. government. But when you look at that law now, you realize that can't even be enforced, and it's likely unconstitutional. Violates the First Amendment to the Constitution, the freedom of speech, the ability to talk to people from overseas. Now, we've had a lot of globalization. We've had a lot of changes in our technology. But again, the fact that you could have anyone you want, you know, by video on your personal phone that's in your pocket. You know, that was Jetsons-like 20 years ago. So imagine, you know, 1799 writing that into law. I mean, so again, it was made sense at the time. Made no sense today. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. I want to hear what you all think about this. Because this is where Joe Biden gets into hot water, is when he's pressed with direct questions from people like George Stephanopoulos on these Sunday shows. And listen, if you're running for president of the United States, you're going to get asked questions direct, and you start answering direct, and Joe Biden was there in the room. But take a listen to how he first denies having anything to do with Mike Flynn.
What did you know about those moves to investigate Michael Flynn, and was there anything improper done?
I know nothing about those moves to investigate Michael Flynn.
I do want to press that. You say you didn't know anything about it, but you were reported to be at a January 5th, 2017 meeting where you and the president were briefed on the FBI's plan to question Michael Flynn.
I thought you asked me whether or not I had anything to do with him being prosecuted.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was aware that they asked for an investigation, but that's all I know about it.
That's all I know about it? I mean, Sam, we know now that's a lie. And again, I mean, we know it's a lie because the vice president's suggesting what laws to use to go after Mike Flynn.
It's a lie, and one that isn't even believable. Jordan, that interview is from 6 weeks ago. That's not like it's an interview that was happening when he had a whole lot going on. That's well after this became a headline story. He certainly would have taken careful recollection of what he was involved with. And Jordan, not only in front of the president of the United States, Barack Obama, did he recommend a looking into the Logan Act, a violation, but he also personally issued one of these unmasking requests. So it's not just like he had some glancing involvement either, and now he's you know, trying to act like it was insignificant. Jordan, he was one of the main players here, and this lie that says he was not involved in it was made at a time where, you know, Jordan, he has taken a look and he has full recollection of what he was involved in, and yet he still tried to pass it off as if he wasn't involved.
Folks, again, I want to take your calls, 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us there. That's 1-800-684-3110. And to remind you, again, as we're walking through these timelines, the day before this meeting that we now have notes from, Peter Strzok's handwritten notes implicating the President of the United States, President Obama, implicating Joe Biden, Vice President of the United States at the time. You know, he's got Sally Yates there. He's got Susan Rice in the room. And he's got Jim Comey as well. And you realize that the day before this, the FBI was ready to close. They were ready to close the investigation into Mike Flynn. So the FBI drafted a document. It had gotten to Peter Strzok's desk on January 4th, 2017. That was Crossfire Razor. It is before Crossfire Hurricane, so before it expands to President Trump and trying to build this narrative that it was the Trump campaign where the Russian agents, not just Mike Flynn. But we know that they were ready to close it. That basically, before we get to a special counsel, when you actually have, if you think that the investigation was legitimate or not to begin with, and I think with Peter Strzok leading the charge, you could question that, but his own agents were ready to close it out and were suggesting to their boss, Peter Strzok, that it be closed. So we would have never had a special counsel. We wouldn't have drugged the country through impeachment. We wouldn't have had these issues. We wouldn't have been so divisive. And honestly, the impeachment, which had nothing to do with the special counsel. I mean, even that, think about that for a moment. Remind yourself. The special counsel closes, then they're impeaching President Trump over a phone call with Ukraine with 35 people listening in? And you just don't like the policy decisions? You don't like the way he conducts business as President of the United States? And so your impeachment doesn't go anywhere. But so they're ready. A review of logical databases not yield info on which to predicate further investigative efforts. We don't have anything else to investigate here. We've looked at everything. There's nothing wrong here. Now, at the time, they already knew about the phone calls. They knew about the content of the phone calls. Jim Comey, the day after this report, is saying the phone calls were legit. So they knew what they were dealing with. But Peter Strzok, that same day, before they're going to go meet with the president and vice president, before they're going to meet with Obama and Biden, he says, don't close Razor. The seventh floor is involved. Now, the reference, of course, you all know, is the seventh floor now means the top echelons of the FBI. But Peter Strzok is part of that top echelon. I want to remind you that. He was with the Andrew McCabe's and the Jim Comey's throughout this. So we're going to continue again to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We come back to, we'll update you on the Justice Act. We knew the vote yesterday. We were tracking that. Democrats did what we unfortunately thought they might do and try to basically, even you're hearing from people like Senator Braun, that they don't think anything's going to happen on police reform because of the election. And the Democrats have chosen that. So we'll talk about that as well when we come back at 1-800-684-3110. And, you know, our new school choice initiative has launched at ACLJ.org. We want you to be a part of it. ACLJ.org. Sign our petition supporting school choice online.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
You listen to this. This is Senator Marco Rubio. He was talking directly about what we just played for you before we went to break. That's Joe Biden on with George Stephanopoulos. He's denying knowing anything about with Mike Flynn. And then he's saying, well, I knew about the investigation, but I wasn't directing any part of the, you know, the investigation. Then we know now from Peter Strzok's own notes that it was Joe Biden was suggesting how to keep investigation alive. It's the only interpretation I have from him bringing up the Logan Act, that it was Vice President Biden. I mean, this has kind of sat with me for these last 24 hours since we saw this come out. And when I keep looking down and seeing VP, you know, in this handwriting, Logan Act, and then he tries to bring it back again when he's quoted again by Peter Strzok in his handwritten notes by Peter Strzok. I've been on the Intel Committee for 10 years. I've never seen, you know, and then you have President Obama cutting him off there. But he's kind of come up with a way to keep this alive, and in fact, it does keep it alive. So I just want to play for you what Senator Rubio, okay? So Senator Rubio of Florida had to say about Joe Biden's, now that we are looking back with these notes and looking back at how George, the George Stephanopoulos interview, what Senator Rubio is saying about Joe Biden.
First, he didn't know anything about it. Then he said he was aware. Now there's documents saying he might have been the one, Joe Biden, to say, let's investigate Michael Flynn. Your final thought.
Well, I think ultimately, if all this proves to be true, then there's really only two things to conclude from it. Either A, he's suffering from severe memory loss, or B, he's not being honest. He's lying. So, I mean, we'll find out soon enough when the Judiciary Committee does its investigation in the eyes of right in front of the American people. But either he's got memory loss or he's not telling the truth. Neither one of those is good.
No, I mean, neither one of those is good. And I do think Joe Biden does not seem very competent anytime he's getting pressed on these things. But you saw that actually when he got asked these direct questions, he immediately came out with an answer. You know, he didn't try to couch the first answer. He tried to couch it the second time and try to reword what he wasn't asked by George Stephanopoulos. He wasn't asked directly about, you know, were you involved in the actual investigation or were you involved in the actual prosecution? And of course, he wasn't involved in the prosecution technically. What he was involved with was keeping the investigation alive for a few weeks because then they were leaving office. But he didn't act like a confused person there. He actually looked, to me, I think it's more the lying and not just Joe Biden being caught off guard with memory loss, as Rubio said, it's either one or the other, because he was actually so coherent with these two answers. He actually tried to flip George Stephanopoulos' words on George Stephanopoulos and try to dance around it without a lot of prodding.
Jordan, he got caught. I mean, he didn't expect his friend George Stephanopoulos to call him on this, but he got caught and he didn't have an answer for it. And, you know, you say he wasn't technically involved in the prosecution, and that is technically accurate. But, Jordan, the people who were responsible for pursuing the investigation and then turning it over for a decision on prosecution had made their decision. And their decision was to close the case. And it was only because of the intervention of Peter Strzok and Jim Comey and now apparently President Obama and Vice President Biden that prosecutorial decision began again. And, Jordan, I would just tell you this. It's just shocking to me that General Flynn and his attorneys are just now getting this information. How is it possible that you've been through all of this and they're just now getting the information? And I think the line that you read from General Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell, really says it maybe the most succinctly when she said that Director Comey himself and the highest levels of the Obama administration, that means the president and the vice president, had the transcripts of Flynn's call with officials of other countries and knew General Flynn's calls were lawful and proper, and yet, Jordan, they made the decision to continue prosecution. He might not have been involved in the prosecution, but they made this decision to start it up again.
You go back to the interview. It's 1-800-684-3110. I want to get your thoughts on this because Joe Biden literally says, I know nothing about the moves to investigate Mike Flynn in the first part of the interview. He doesn't say, prosecute. He says investigate. Then he turns it around with George Stephanopoulos and said, well, we now know that you were in a meeting on January 5th. By the way, Joe Biden just confirmed that for us in that interview. Also, he confirmed Peter Schrock's notes. He confirmed all this, puts it all together about how involved the president of the United States. Imagine if President Trump, okay, they wanted to have an impeachment over phone calls because they thought he was suggesting that you to get any of the aid for the United States, you know, opened up that you had to investigate Joe Biden, who at the time was not an actual government official and whose his family members were not government officials. But we went through impeachment over that. Okay? Took the country through that and right into basically like a pandemic. So when you go back and actually look at what Joe Biden's trying to deny, I think he's extremely competent on this, which makes me think he actually cared about this one. He was actually involved. He knew what he was trying to do, and he was trying to stance and trying to like dance around the issue. Go back and listen again, by 12.
What did you know about those moves to investigate Michael Flynn, and was there anything improper done?
I know nothing about those moves to investigate Michael Flynn.
I do want to press that. You say you didn't know anything about it, but you were reported to be at a January 5th, 2017 meeting where you and the president were briefed on the FBI's plan to question Michael Flynn.
I thought you asked me whether or not I had anything to do with him being prosecuted.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was aware that there was, that there, they asked for an investigation, but that's all I know about it.
Okay. We know. In his first denial, then he literally uses the word investigate. He didn't just say, I didn't know anything about Flynn or that, because that would have been right. So he tried to like couch, I guess he tried to couch it there. He didn't couch it effectively. Had to go back and say, oh, I thought you were talking about actually, you know, the prosecution. But that's not even what Joe Biden said. He said investigate. And then, you know, you bring up too that you've got a Susan Rice letter a couple weeks after this. The final day of office for the Obama administration, the day that President Trump is being sworn in, and she's writing an email saying everything's done by the book, you know, by the book, by the book.
Yeah, first of all, on the vice president, I mean, yes, you did know they were investigating because you were throwing out ideas on where that investigation could pursue to. So, you know, there's just no articulation of that conversation where he didn't know it was investigating could be accurate. And you're right, Jordan, on the Susan Rice memo. I mean, remember, this was not a memo that Susan Rice made immediately after leaving the Oval Office. That's essentially what we have from Peter Strzok, his notes from that day or from that moment. Jordan, a couple of weeks later, on the last day in power for Susan Rice, she found this meeting on January 5th that we've been talking about significant enough that one of her last tasks while being in power was to memorialize that meeting and try to cover the tracks. And you know, I just got to tie it to the news today that she's on the short list for Vice President Biden to be his running mate. I mean, Jordan, if you're Vice President Biden and you're worried about this meeting, what would be one of the best ways to try to inoculate yourself against that? It would be to put one of the other people who was in that meeting and memorialized it in a way that you were comfortable with on the ticket as your running mate. Pretty telling, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing, when you put it all together, I mean, it's obviously it stinks. And when you look at the timeline and you remember, again, this all could have been done on January 4th. Okay, on January 4th, it was Peter Strzok who decided, we'll keep this open. We'll take it to the president and vice president. We'll take it to Obama and Biden. And then we'll keep this open. We're going to keep this, even though my own agents are telling me to close this out. We would have never gotten a crossfire hurricane. You know, voters would get to decide if President Trump got another 4 years based on policies, decision-making, responses, whatever. But we wouldn't have had the country divided like we have been over these last couple of years. And, of course, these officials that have been raked through. And I just want you to know, it was President Obama was directly responsible. Vice President Biden are directly responsible. And when you look at this, even they were getting pushback from people like Jim Comey, which is pretty, even that is kind of tough to imagine at this point, but it's true.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
I'm going to jump right to, as well, I want to get you updated. Thanks for joining for our second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live, and update you as we work through the significance of this Peter Strzok memo that was released. And of course, you know, we're talking to Vice President Biden, who is now directly implicated in prodding on and keeping this investigation going to take down the Trump administration, to take down, and by using legal resources, by using the FBI. This is the worst of the worst. But what did you expect from Obama and Biden when they did this with the IRS? I mean, their administration was also using the IRS to take down American grassroots activists. Okay, a lot less high profile than Mike Flynn, a lot less high profile than Donald Trump, a lot less high profile. And yet they were willing to try to take down the Tea Party by utilizing the IRS. And by the way, during that case, when we represented all those Tea Party groups, Stan, we had to deal with the FBI trying to get involved because they were the IRS wanted to get the FBI involved and Department of Justice involved in their oversight of nonprofit groups, and they started to try to suggest bringing in FBI agents. And we knew that, again, this stunk from the highest levels. It's the same administration getting caught doing the same thing again.
Yeah, it was the bureaucracy circling the wagons to try to protect their own, Jordan. And look, as distasteful as it is when elected officials do this kind of thing for partisan gain, it's really far more dangerous when it permeates to the bureaucracy, and the bureaucracy who the American people don't have direct ability to remove, engage in that. That's what we saw with the IRS scandal. But then, Jordan, when you layer onto that unaccountability of the bureaucracy, an elected class who not only enables it, Jordan, but actually directs it, which I really think what we're looking at with these notes from Peter Strzok, I think that's what this is. It's the elected layer, the elected officials pointing to the bureaucracy, pointing to Jim Comey, who will stay behind when they transition out of power and saying, stay on this. Jordan, that makes what we saw during the IRS, as dangerous as that was, that adds a whole nother layer of it because it puts the people that the American people did choose in the place of being responsible for that abuse. So, it takes the IRS and takes it to another level, in my view.
When you're hearing from us on this too, it's not like anybody else has been more involved in these issues. So we were involved with them during the Obama administration because as Dan was just pointing out, we knew about it with the IRS, we knew about it with the bureaucracy there, the FBI, and yet every time they would do any investigation, they would come to nothing because there was nothing. There was nothing wrong with those Tea Party groups. They all deserved to get their tax exempt status as C4s, some as C3s. And there was nothing wrong with what Michael Flynn was doing, these phone calls. He didn't deserve to be taken down and dragged through years of prosecution, criminal prosecution, by the top echelons of our government. And yet, this is the same administration that brought you the attempted takedown of Americans just trying to be grassroots activists and grassroots organizing and educating. The same group tries to take down their incoming administration because they didn't agree with them. Now, the whole time they would protect people like Hillary Clinton, they would protect those folks, but they would not. They didn't care about using these levers of power against whether it was just ordinary American citizens or Mike Flynn, the national security advisor to the incoming president of the United States. It doesn't matter. They will just use those levers of power as much as they can and give them that direction to say, keep doing this. Keep trying to take him down. Keep trying to divide the country. When we get back, we'll update you on the Justice Act. I'm going to take Elaine's call on that. So, Elaine, hold on the line. We're going to get back right to you when we come back from the break and update you on what happened. If you weren't on the broadcast yesterday or got lost in the the going through the Flynn opinion, as well as what it means, this opinion, kind of in the bigger context to these investigations. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live and taking your phone calls. Going through again, these handwritten notes, it's a big deal, folks. It's a big deal. And this is just I think this is just the beginning here that we're just starting to learn about, because you see parts that are redacted, and you see you're already able to build this narrative on your own. I also want you to go to ACLJ.org and check out our new School Choice Initiative. That's at ACLJ.org. We want to get you involved there with school choice, a civil rights issue of our time, education. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Folks, we're going to get right back to the Flynn matter, keep walking through that, but I do want to update you, too, on the Justice Act as well. So if you're just joining us, the police reform Senator Scott from South Carolina had proposed, and it was shot down by Democrats. They didn't want to debate police reform. They didn't want to open the door to the debate. It wouldn't have even just been his. You know, they tried to make it all about, well, what about qualified immunity? What about, you know, these things? But they could have opened the door to the debating that, and they were actually Republican senators ready to reform, change qualified immunity. So I think likely actually would have gotten probably compromise on that, compromise on the chokeholds. I mean, literally, they were barred under Senator Scott's proposed legislation unless the officer's life was being threatened. And so it actually put it pretty high bar for an officer to even utilize that kind of. Same thing went for the no-knock warrants, very limited ability to use them. But I want to take Elaine's call from Nevada. Elaine's been holding on, line 3. Elaine, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hello there. Yes, I do have a question.
Yep.
I listened to Tim Scott's wonderful speech after it was voted no. And then I listened to the senator from Virginia, and he explained why he voted no. And he said it wasn't who presented the bill or when the bill was presented, but how it was presented, that it didn't go through the committee first. And so I was just confused about that.
You could have legislation that goes through committee stand. That's not required. I mean, it's not a requirement. That is an excuse for a partisan vote. And Elaine, this is what happened. Democrats decided as a party to follow Chuck Schumer, follow the national toe of the line, and say, you know what? We don't want any reform to happen under this president right now leading into an election. So they were going to come up with excuses, all different, by the way. So Tim Scott's got one. Cory Booker's got a different excuse. Everybody's got different excuses. But I do want to go to Than on this because, Than, it's absurd.
Yeah, Senator Kaine ought to be ashamed of himself. He said this right after a very powerful speech by Senator Scott. Elaine's exactly correct about this, but let me just set the record straight. Rule 14 of the United States Senate allows bills to be considered on the floor of the Senate without going through committee. Senator Kaine knows this very well. He's had legislation that has been his, that he's sponsored, that has proceeded in this way. It happens all the time. And Jordan, why did it happen this way? Why did it go straight to the floor of the Senate instead of through committee in regular order? Because if you back up 2 weeks ago, Leader Schumer and Leader McConnell both agreed that something had to be considered before the July 4th recess. And when Leader McConnell agreed to that, Jordan, that's when Leader Schumer realized that, he'd been caught. Leader McConnell was actually serious about getting this done, and he did not want to lose credit for it. And the last thing I'd say to Senator Kaine, if he wanted this to have due process, if the amendments that went forward on the floor of the Senate were not approved, guess what? He would have still had another 60-vote threshold to end debate on that measure. He could have opposed it at that point. That is completely a red herring from Senator Kaine.
Yeah, so, I mean, there you go, Elaine. I hope that answer. I think that they all had their different excuses and different reasons why to take this. But remember, as Senator Scott points out, exactly why. They're following Nancy Pelosi's line. They're following Chuck Schumer's line. And he's talking about it here on the floor of the Senate by 34.
When Speaker Pelosi says one of the most heinous things I can imagine, that the Republicans are actually trying to cover up murder, the murder of George Floyd, with our legislation. That's not politics. That's not a game to win. That's you lose, you will sooner or later lose. But immediately, every kid around the nation that heard that nonsense lost that moment.
So again, Nancy Pelosi was asked about, was given an opportunity to actually apologize for that statement, trying to, it sounds almost like, did she really say it? I mean, she actually was asked to apologize for it on MSNBC. She's given the opportunity. You want to apologize right now? Take a listen to this, Byte 5.
Will you apologize?
Absolutely, positively not. The fact is, people say, I think you, frankly, in the press have given them far too much credit for a bill that does nothing.
So, I mean, she's not apologizing, Than. It is one of the more heinous things I've heard. This entire last, 4 or 5 days with what Senator Scott has gone through. So you got Nancy Pelosi calling his legislation equal to the same as murdering George Floyd, and that Republicans are responsible.
Yeah, said they were getting away with the murder of George Floyd. I'll say the same thing I said yesterday, Jordan. Officer Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd. That's who murdered George Floyd. Speaker Pelosi should be ashamed for making this a political weapon. And I'll just tell you, I watched Senator Scott give multiple speeches on the floor of the Senate. He said multiple times this hurt his soul. Jordan, I completely agree with that. I completely believe him that it did. Speaker Pelosi ought to know better. And here's the honest truth. I think she does know better. And that makes it even worse.
Yeah, I mean, it is shocking. Shocking to see from even Nancy Pelosi to go in that step further and say that they're responsible for murder and that they're committing murder again and talking about anybody who happens to be a Republican. I mean, this is the kind of rhetoric we're using now in our country. I mean, and you wonder why we're such a divided nation, and they think it's President Trump's fault. They are the ones who continue to divide us. They continue to divide us every single day. I want to go back to the phone zone, 1-800-684-3110, to answer your questions on Flynn, on Judge Sullivan, on these orders. Let's go to Larry in South Carolina on line one. Larry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoy your show. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, with the actions of Judge Sullivan, do these warrant possible investigation into his potential removal from the bench?
I don't think so. Because, and I'll say this: why it has been kind of unprecedented throughout. So remember, he was first brought these charges by the Department of Justice, and Mike Flynn pled guilty to them, and that's basically he was just handling the kind of what happens next, and then it gets turned around, and it became an issue where the Department of Justice said, we were wrong to even bring these charges. We didn't have a legitimate reason to even be investigating this. So the whole premise of bringing these charges was tainted, wrong, and we would have dropped this. And then I think he took some Judge Sullivan took some very bizarre steps. Obviously, outside the norm. Not even just bizarre, things you've never seen before. Judges appointing amicus to argue against and to basically re-prosecute Mike Flynn and things like that. I mean, so it was definitely bizarre actions by the judge. But I think the truth is, Dan, where we should look and where Washington, D.C. is not at the judiciary with Judge Sullivan so much as – and you can say that what he did was absurd. You could say it was ridiculous, outside the norms. This Court of Appeals smacked him down for it. But it's looking at the FBI and Department of Justice under the Obama administration and under the leadership of people like Jim Comey and under the leadership of the previous administration that got to the point of even trying to bring these charges against Mike Flynn. Those are the people that should be investigated, the investigators.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I'd say to Larry on Judge Sullivan, let's see if he follows this order all the way completely. If he doesn't at that point, then you might have an issue. But Jordan, you're exactly correct. The reason that the prosecutorial powers exist in the Article II branch, the executive branch, is because the people can elect the leadership of that branch. And then the people that are appointed inside the executive branch have more accountability to the people than do the Article III judges who, yes, they're nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate, but they're a layer removed and they have lifetime appointments. That's why that power resides in the Article II branch. But Jordan, when there's abuses inside that Article II branch, as there obviously were here, there have to be consequences. So I would look at Vice President Biden's role in this and see if you think that he should be, re-put in charge of this. And then you have to hold people like Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok, who clearly abused their power. Jordan, you've got to hold them accountable.
Well, listen, this is Christopher Wray. He was on Fox News with Special Report last night. And so he's the FBI director now, and he directly talked about Flynn and talked about what the FBI is still doing. This is internal just to the FBI's own practices and procedures. Take a listen.
The Flynn investigation, which took place before I started, and then by the time I started was in the hands of the special counsel's office, is something that has, in my view, raised serious concerns and questions, which is why I ordered an after-action review by our inspection division to take a look at whether or not the FBI's policies and procedures need to be changed and if there are any current employees left who may bear any responsibility for misconduct.
I mean, that's how serious. Remember, Peter Strzok's gone. Lisa Page's gone. Obviously, Jim Comey is gone. And yet, the FBI... to me, I mean, it's a pretty telling when the FBI director is saying they are still investigating at the FBI. Remember, this was all happening in 2017, but because it was taken over by the special counsel's office and Mueller's office for another 2 years, that the FBI is still looking at if there's people at the FBI who might be responsible. And responsibility is the word that Chris Wray used for what he has serious concerns and questions about, which he thinks that this is just the internal. This is not a criminal investigation by a U.S. attorney. This is just their internal FBI saying, we need to change our policies and practices. We need to look at whether it was the people who were the problem or the policies that were the problem, a mixture of both. And do we still have any of those bad people here who are responsible for the reason why Americans no longer have faith in this right now in these institutions? And it's the Obama administration, the same holdovers, the same reason the IRS... It's one thing not to like it. It's another thing to say you can't trust it and you're being legitimate about that. We know that was the truth. Same goes for the FBI right now.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. It's Jordan Sekulow. Thad Bennett's here as well. He's out of Washington, D.C., and we are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about the Flynn matter. I just want to remind you, too. So January 5th, you have the meeting in the Oval Office that now we have the notes from Peter Strzok. It confirms President Obama's involvement and confirms Vice President Biden's involvement. It actually quotes them in Peter Strzok's notes. We know Susan Rice was also there. We know Sally Yates was there. We know Jim Comey's there. He's also quoted. And he says they appear legit, what Michael Flynn was doing in these phone calls, which that is the same conclusion, by the way, the FBI agents who investigated this for the top echelons of the FBI, as they love to say. That's what those FBI agents found. Those FBI agents found that it was totally, there was nothing to investigate. It was just normal practice that in an incoming national security advisor transition team reaching out, nothing wrong. And they suggested to close that. But remember, so you get to January 12th, you have the last unmasking request we all know about that's been reported is from Vice President Joe Biden, not his chief of staff, not someone else named who works for him. We're not making that connection. It literally lists Vice President Joe Biden. So then you have you get the Trump administration in for 4 days. And then on January 24th, Mike Flynn gets approached by the two FBI agents who Jim Comey decides just to send in and not go through the normal chain, which would go through the White House counsel's office and the normal chain of command, if you will. He just tries to send them in, and he says he's taking advantage of the Trump administration not being very, you know, it's just not organized the same way. The truth is they were there for 10 days. And look at what was happening to them that they didn't know about at the time. This is what was happening to them while they were coming into office for the last couple of months, was that you had the entire FBI, and then the FBI finally saying, we don't even have anything to see here, but then they go to a meeting with Joe Biden and Obama. And they say, we do have something to see. We want to keep this going. So I just want to remind you that all was happening within about a 2-week time period. So you go from the January 5th meeting to President Trump taking the oath of office, being sworn in as President of the United States, his inauguration. And literally 4 days later, Mike Flynn is getting approached by two FBI agents at the White House and asked about these phone calls like there was anything to ask about. And now you understand why the Department of Justice said there was nothing to ask about. All they're telling Judge Sullivan is what the FBI under President Obama and his Jim Comey, what the FBI found is all the Department of Justice put forward in this case was that there was nothing else to investigate. There was no basis to send in the FBI agents then 2 weeks later to ask about legit phone calls. So this is why you bring Jim Comey back up and you have him looked at we know that's being looked at by people, you know, the U.S. attorney and John Durham, because that's where crimes could be committed and wrongdoing could have been committed, is that 2-week time period where Jim Comey knows by, you know, January 5th, we now know, at the latest, he knows, because he's saying it in a meeting with the President of the United States, that the phone calls were legit. And then yet he sends 2 weeks later, because he got fired by Donald Trump. Because he took the job of staying on as FBI director, but then he got fired. So, he sends them in after he knows that it's all legit, and then he tries to send two FBI agents to build as a predicate to take someone's national security advisor down. phone calls that there was nothing to ask about? May have been inappropriate for the FBI to be asking about, honestly. May have been wrong for the FBI. Maybe that's why Mike Flynn wasn't as forthcoming with them. Because why would you be about national security to two FBI agents? Two random FBI agents show up, okay, at your office. And you're the national security advisor to the president of the United States who's elected by the American people. Those FBI agents were not elected by anyone. Okay? And suddenly, maybe you're not totally forthcoming to them. Maybe you're not telling them all about your phone calls with a Russian ambassador. Maybe because they had no reason to be asking about it. And just asking about it alone may have been, I mean, they may have been the ones committing crimes. Just think about that for a moment. I want to take Monica's call on line two. Monica's calling out of Connecticut. Monica, welcome to JSEC Hill Live.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call. Bless you for all that you do. I've just been listening to all of this, and there's been no mention. Why in particular this General Flynn? Why was he particularly targeted for this, for what they've done to him?
Dan, I think it's because Flynn was the one connection they had to the Trump administration. And let me explain that, because he was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency under President Obama, had a falling out on policy matters. President Obama had the right to remove him as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. He did back, I think it was in 2014. And so they knew him. He was probably the, if you will, if there was one connection that President Obama had at all to President Trump of incoming folks, incoming advisors, of anybody that he had worked with closely, it was Mike Flynn.
Yeah, when it comes to the why, Jordan, I really do think that's it. It was, one, he may have known too much from the Obama administration, but then on the flip side of that coin, Jordan, I think maybe it would legitimize the Trump administration, saying someone that we trusted to engage in this role, the Trump administration does, we don't want to legitimize them, we want to undermine them. But I do think the biggest thing was just that they had a hook there where they could maybe have a conversation. But Jordan, I continue to circle back to this. The two agents that Jim Comey flippantly sent over there, which Jim Comey's in a world have heard over that on. He should be lawyering up. But Jordan, the two agents, Peter Strzok, we know he's corrupt. We've got the whole list. The other agent, Jordan, Joseph Pianka, where's his story? Where's his testimony? The Senate Judiciary is continuing to look at him. They are going to issue a subpoena for him. I wonder if Joseph Pianka can provide some of those answers. Why did they look at General Flynn? I think that FBI agent knows the answer to that, Jordan, and I think we ought to as well.
Folks, I want to update you on a couple other matters while we got you for a couple more. So I want you first, check out ACLJ.org. At ACLJ.org, you're going to see all this information we've posted about with our school choice initiative. So we've got, I think, four blogs up now. We've got information there on a petition you can sign as well, supporting our school choice initiative, supporting voucher programs. We're going to be putting up model legislation. And we want you to get involved in this. We believe, you know, education is the real civil rights issue of our time. If people have access to good education, whether that's public school education, a private school education, or a religious school, a school with no religious affiliation at all, whether it's a charter school, that when folks have access to a good education, their parents can have school choice, the ability to choose where to send their kids and have some decision-making in that process, that's really how you change generationally people, regardless of what zip code they're coming from, and regardless of what side of the tracks they're born on, and all those issues that we talk about that's caused us unrest in our country, where does it all start? I think it starts, you know, it starts with parents, but the secondary is schools. Okay, by the time you're getting into real trouble as an adult or someone who's treated it legally as an adult, I mean, you've already gone through that system, and have they failed you? So what role can actually these schools play? Why is the left so afraid of allowing school choice? We're getting into all of that at ACLJ.org. We're doing it on the broadcast as well, but of course we've got to update you on these other matters. And Thad, just to remind people as well, there's no judicial, there's no openings right now for judicial nominees.
Yeah, yesterday the United States Senate confirmed Corey Wilson to the Fifth Circuit. Jordan, there is not a single vacancy across the country when it comes to U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. That's unreal. It's been 40 years since that's been the case. Not a single vacancy on the Circuit Court of Appeals.
Folks, we can get into that more tomorrow on the broadcast as well. It's 200th nominee confirmed by the U.S. Senate. Again, it's not getting the attention it deserves. ACLJ.org, be a part of our school choice initiative. I'm asking you, and everybody who's listening, take part in this. Sign our petition at ACLJ.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.